Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I've got a special program in store for you today, and it's a little twist. You know, it may surprise you, the subject. Now, the guest returning will not surprise you. Thomas Corley, certified public accountant and certified financial planner, has been on our program before. He's president of Serifus and Company. He's also CEO of Rich Habits Institute, and he is an author, prolific at that. Really enjoy his writings and work. He is the author of How to Raise Our Children to Be Happy and Successful in Life and The Daily Success Habits of Wealthy Individuals. You can get those books and a lot more great information from Tom's website, richhabits.net. And as I said, best-selling author, Tom works both as a CPA and a CFP, holds a master's degree in taxation, president of Serifus and Company, and we're very glad to have him with us. He's shared his insights on television, radio, been featured in numerous print and online publications. So welcome back, Tom. Glad to have you.
Hey, David. Thanks for having me back on. I really love being on your program.
You are very welcome. I'm glad to have your time. I know you're busy, and I love your writing. I love what you're doing. And, you know, so much of it, as I read it, I go, well, golly, that makes sense. Oh, that makes sense. Oh, that makes sense. So I really love how you brought it together. It's really a beautiful codification of some really intelligent stuff. So thank you for doing the fine work that you're doing. And let's dive right in. I know that one of the things that you have done is you've followed and tracked and studied people that are successful and people that we could call wealthy, that we could use the word rich, if that's not a bad thing to say in today's world, with the demonizing of those that are more successful by some parts of our culture. So I know that you've studied this a lot, and one of the things I know that you wanted to talk about today with me on the program for our listeners are some of the myths that you've uncovered in studying this part of our population and how they became successful and how they became wealthy. So speak to us a little bit about the myths surrounding the folks that have become most successful in our United States culture.
Yeah, well, just in a way of a little bit of background, you know, we started out wealthy in my family, and at the age of about 9, it all came crashing down. My dad's warehouse burnt to the ground, and we lost literally everything except our house. My dad managed to keep hold of the house, doing whatever he could do to make money. And so, you know, we kind of grew up, David, with the notion that money was bad, wealthy people were evil and greedy. You know, I didn't have too many good things to say about wealthy people growing up. Those kind of limiting beliefs stayed with me even into my adult years, and they kind of started to go away when I began doing my research on the daily habits of the rich and the poor. And I uncovered a whole host of myths, things that just shattered everything I believed about wealthy people. One of them, for example, I grew up believing that most of the wealthy people inherited their money. Mm. And, you know, it's kind of the luck of the draw thing. So if you didn't inherit money and you were poor, well, that's just the way life is. And what I found out in my research was that 82% of the wealthy in my study didn't inherit anything.
Nothing.
And in fact, 76%, wow, or 177 of the wealthy in my study were self-made millionaires, and they came from primarily poor backgrounds and middle-class backgrounds. So that was one of the big myths that exploded when I was doing this research.
That's remarkable, Tom, and I appreciate your backstory and sharing that. I mean, that gives you actually a atypical perspective. Ironic, you could make that argument. It's also ironic that you ended up finding yourself not only in the financial planning world, that you ended up getting involved with the studies of these more successful people in our society and how they became so. And that's a really interesting perspective. So the first myth that you've shared, now I have to comment, and it's a little political, but I'm sure you'll indulge me and our listeners will as well, because I don't mean anything other than just acknowledge the obvious, and that is that this concept that is kind of the drumbeat that we hear in the media about people that are more successful and wealthy, the basic theme is that They got it somehow by hurting somebody else. They got it by stepping on somebody. They got it by cheating. They inherited it. They, you know, just were purely lucky. Lightning struck, and they were born into an extraordinarily wealthy family, and all they had to do was just catch the ball when it was thrown to them, and if they couldn't do that, somebody would hand it to them. All of those themes, that thematic entitlement of just pure chance or cheating, either by chance or cheating, you got the money. And what you're already revealing is that 75% of the folks in your study were self-made. Now, I'll play devil's advocate, because is there any cherry picking here, Tom? Is there anything special? Tell me about your procedure, you know, for having what we would call a valid population to study. How did you arrive at these folks? Because it's real easy for somebody to hear what we're talking about here and go, oh, well, Tom cherry-picked that to get the results he wanted.
Yeah, actually, that's a great question. And for any of your listeners, they could go onto my website, richhabits.net, and I actually posted the methodology behind my research.
Okay.
So they could see that there's a pretty good dichotomy between, you know, the bulk of them came from the New York metropolitan area, so I guess you could make a case, hey, you're cherry-picking in that one area. But there were also others in California and Florida and Colorado and, you know, pretty spread out, sprinkled around in a sense. And some of them were in their 30s, some of them were in their 40s, some of them were in their 50s, and so on. So there's what I tried to do was find a broad scope of wealthy people, and I did, in part, some of that came from my clients, some of it came from my clients, the relationships that they had. Some of them were business partners that we did business with, you know, all of our financial planning group and our CPA firm, and some of them just came in because I was offering free financial planning, just so I could get some, you know, document some of their habits and
sure.
ask them some of the questions. So I spent 5 years trying to get the right mix of people, the reason it took 5 years is because it's hard to do if you do it right.
That makes sense. Well, yeah, because you don't want to rush something like this. So it is that's good to know you have the methodology, and that's richhabits.net, and you can understand how Tom went about this study, because what you're doing, and I know you know this, but it's really, I got to tell you, you're either brave or foolhardy, and you're the only one that can really answer that question, Tom, is you're stepping all over some of these political assertions that are heavily debated and or put out there during political season, which seems to be year-round, year in and year out now, that the wealthiest people, they didn't work hard for it.
Yeah, I've found out that I am a disruptor. I didn't realize that. I thought I was just telling the truth and sharing information. I didn't have any slant on this, except that I did hate wealthy people when I started this research.
So ironic.
I guess there was a bias there that was completely turned on its head. But with disruptors, unfortunately, you know, you get people that agree with you and people that just get ticked off at you, David. And I've had my share of both.
All right. Well, then I'm going to put you in the brave category, because that's you. I'm sure you have become a target for, you know, anytime somebody stands up and tells the truth, it seems like they become a target very quickly. And I've seen a little bit of that myself, but not as much as I'm sure you have. So 76% self-made, and a third of those came from poor households. And then the majority, I suppose, or just under half, came from middle-class households. And so the first myth basically is that you, to be wealthy, you have to be born into it, and that's not the case. That's only a quarter of the people that in your study.
Yeah, and you know, I love telling the story about Dr. Ben Carson. He's the neurosurgeon. He's running for president right now. And the reason I love telling his story is because he was born and raised in the ghettos of Detroit, and his mom cleaned houses for wealthy people. And in a sense, she came to the same conclusions that I did. She was watching these wealthy people and how they raised their kids, and she found two things that they did that she wasn't doing at home with her kids. One was the parents in these wealthy households made their kids read every day,
yeah.
not for entertainment, but for education, self-education. That was one thing she noticed. The other thing she noticed is they didn't watch a lot of TV. So when she got back to her house, she said, well, I'm going to do just what the wealthy people did. And she, her kids were not allowed to watch more than an hour of TV a day, and then she picked out the programming. Mm-hmm. And what they were required to do was to read. Ben Carson has a brother, so both of them had to go to the library every day. They had to read, and then at the end of the week, David, they had to give their mom a summary of what they learned that week. And this went on for years, and Ben Carson talks about it in a couple of his books, how it wasn't until he was in high school that he found out that his mother was illiterate. So she was so-called reading these summaries. He was, you know, just shocked that she couldn't even read what he was writing and what they were writing because she was illiterate. But she knew intuitively, just from the wealthy families, that if she could get her kids to read, it was an avenue out of the ghetto.
Excellent. Well, and here we have her son running for the highest office in the land, as they say.
Amazing.
Interesting stuff. Excellent. Thomas Corley, ladies and gentlemen, CPA and certified financial planner, Seraphis & Company. He's the president. He's also CEO of Rich Habits Institute. He's an author. I mentioned the books to you, How to Raise Our Children to Be Happy and Successful in Life, and The Daily Success Habits of Wealthy Individuals. Both of those available over at richhabits.net. Quick break. We'll be right back with Tom.
Where can you find more spin than in politics? If you said financial services, you'd be correct. Just ask a stockbroker or insurance agent how you should invest your money, and what do you think they would say? Unfortunately, if an advisor is limited in what he can offer, that advisor is often understandably biased. You need to ask questions like what products and services they can and cannot offer. Ask about their licensing and credentials. Remain skeptical. This PSA has been brought to you by Holland Financial, who wants to help you to plan stronger. For more information, call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Thomas Corley on the line with me, CPA and certified financial planner, president of Seraphis & Company and CEO of Rich Habits Institute, richhabits.net. And we're talking about a new twist on Thomas's work, looking at the studies he's done with wealthy and successful people in the United States. And we were talking before the break, myth number one, that rich people inherit all their money and they only had to catch the ball, so to speak. And we find that 75% were self-made millionaires, which is just remarkable. Now, I'd like to move on, if we could, Tom, to the next myth that you had put out, that rich people don't have to work hard.
Yes.
So wait a minute. I thought, what was his name? Michael Moore, during all of those Occupy Wall Street 1% bashing brigade, where he talked about wealthy people spending millions of dollars just for lunch and they don't have to work.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, the problem is these people are trying to push an agenda. Behind the scenes, they have an agenda. They're like the Wizard of Oz behind the curtain, and they're manipulating all of this information about wealthy people for their self-interest. They have a particular agenda that they're pushing. Well, unfortunately, the research doesn't support their agenda. And what I found, in fact, is that the wealthy people worked many more hours. And it wasn't just my research. I looked at other research, too. You know, the Census Bureau came out with some data on this where they found that wealthy households worked five times as many hours as the average poor household. That, to me, is really startling because, here we're talking about that, poor people are working a lot harder than wealthy people. Wealthy people are just fortunate, and because they have so much money, they don't have to work hard. But that's not what I found. In fact, 86% of the wealthy who had full-time jobs, they worked 50 hours or more each week. And there was – I even broke it down even further, David. The self-made millionaires who loved what they did for a living, they worked 58 hours a week.
Wow.
Versus the self-made millionaires that liked what they did for a living, they worked 51 hours. So there's a lot at play here. There's also doing what you love, which is important. And that's why they work so hard. They either like or love what they do for a living. And as a result, they put in more hours. They gain more expertise. And that turns into value. They create niches. They are providing added value in their products or their services. And because because they're spending so much time doing what they like or they love, they're growing into success. They're growing into the people they need to become in order to be successful. So the wealth just becomes a byproduct of liking or loving what they do for a living.
Sure doesn't jive with all the political rhetoric that we hear. And to take it a step further, I know you found another interesting thing in your study that the wealthier people, and this would make sense, but it also contributes to why they need to work more hours, is that they have multiple sources of income.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. That was another statistic. I've written on this several times because it's just so profound to me. So one of the things that wealthy people do that's unique and is in large part why they're wealthy is they create multiple streams of income. So they're not just relying on their employment, let's say, or their one line of business. They have multiple streams of income. It might be that they own rental properties. It might be that they're writing books. It might be that they're doing speaking engagements. They might have other online businesses that they're pursuing. I mean, you just look at Elon Musk. He's a perfect example. When he was starting out his businesses, he didn't start just one business. He started three businesses, SpaceX, Tesla, and the Solar City at the same time, which is amazing to me. But this is what wealthy people do. They spread their time and they focus intensely on each line of business. And because of, you know, having to manage so many different revenue streams, they have to work so many hours. I mean, I read a statistic where Elon Musk, on average, works about 90 hours a week. I mean, that's incredible when you think about it.
Yeah, you know what? I don't want to work that hard.
Right, me either.
He can have that one. Just get us our electric cars, man. I don't want to work your 90 hours. So let's move on. I want to make sure we get to all these, Tom, and all of these are fascinating, and people are going to have to go to the website and get more information over at richhabits.net. But myth number three, rich people pay less in income tax than everyone else. This is going to hit a hot button, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, because I spent most of my career in tax, I knew that this what this information that was being broadcast out there by the so-called pundits, I knew just it was wrong because I was in the tax field. And what I found out in my research was these top 1% of income earners in the United States, well, David, they're carrying the bucket for 99% of the population because they are responsible for generating 46% of the income tax revenue. So that 1% is responsible for almost half of the tax revenue. If anyone has a right to be ticked off that our tax system is unfair, it's these top 1% because they are, everything is on their shoulders, you know?
Yeah, it's the numbers, if anybody digs into them, they find very quickly that the progressive tax system that we have, the people that make more pay an even larger and larger percentage of that burden. Let's grab another quick break. We'll come right back with Tom Corley, certified financial planner and CPA, president of Serifus & Company and CEO of Rich Habits Institute, author of two books, How to Raise Our Children to Be Happy and Successful in Life, and The Daily Success Habits of Wealthy Individuals, richhabits.net. Quick break. We're right back.
These are challenging times for investors. The stock market is volatile with 10% drops, a common historical occurrence. Is your financial portfolio prepared for such a correction? What about inflation? What's your plan when that gallon of milk or gallon of gasoline costs $16? And what about interest rates? Did you know that a 10-year bond could drop 10% if interest rates rose just 1%? What's your plan for that? Holland Financial has all the answers to questions like these and practical steps to help you hedge against these negative events. Call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com to schedule your one-on-one meeting with David Holland. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
And we're back. Tom Corley on the line with us, generous with his time to come back and spend some time with us on the radio program here. CPA and certified financial planner, richhabits.net for a lot more good information there about Tom and his studies of successful, wealthy people. And I've got to move through these myths because they're fascinating to me, Tom, and I want to make sure we get to all of them. The next one, myth number four, is that rich are rich because they just got lucky. They were in the right place, right time, lightning struck, and the leprechaun jumped out of the lightning bolt and handed the guy $10 million.
Yeah, boy, this is, you know, there is some truth that wealthy people are lucky, but the problem with this message is that they're talking about a different type of luck when these pundits talk about them being wealthy. They're talking about or saying it's random good luck. It's not. It's something called opportunity good luck. It's this opportunity good luck is the byproduct of having all of these good habits, these characteristics, these that make us like persistence and never quitting and working hard. So there's a lot of things, a lot of moving parts that cause this opportunity good luck to take place. And in fact, in my study, only 8% of the wealthy said that luck had anything to do with it, or the random good luck.
Hmm.
It was this 92% said it was they created their own luck, David.
They were ready. They met the opportunity when it presented itself.
Yeah, it's this when you persist, when you decide I'm never going to quit and I'm going to do this until the day I die, irrespective of the fact that I'm not making any money at it. And you know, the wealthy in my study, the most wealthy in my study, took 12 years before they became wealthy.
Hmm.
So they were at this a long time. And they just persisted, and eventually, yes, luck happened, but it happened only because they just did not give up, and they kept at it, and they kept getting better at what they did, and that translated into value, and that value eventually paid dividends to them.
The ironic thing to me, Tom, is if we look at that study you did, and only 8% said it was because of random good luck. Now, let's contrast that to, you know, gambling, lotto winners, you know, maybe some sort of lawsuit, personal injury award, all these events that create what I would call sudden wealth. If you look statistically at those people and how many of them hold on to that money, many people are not ready to receive that kind of money. And there's, you know, kind of these, this may be another thing for you to maybe delve into, or we could maybe talk about it on another show if you've got details and looked at this, but it would seem to me that would be an interesting thing to look at is why they lose that money or why they don't hold on to it or how many actually do. But the numbers are pretty significant that a lot of people that do get the random wealth don't keep it.
Yeah, and that's absolutely true, because when money comes easy, it has no value. When you spend 12 years or 32 years, like many of the wealthy who just liked their job, they spent 32 years accumulating their wealth before they became a millionaire. Well, you know, when it takes that long, David, to become a millionaire, you really value that money. So you're not going to do anything foolish with it. You're going to think twice before you spend that money or invest it in risky ventures.
Fair enough. Well, speaking of lightning striking, let's move on to myth number 5, which is that the rich are better educated. And I want to add to that not only the education, but maybe a genetic predisposition toward learning or just being flat out smarter. So let's get both of those. In your study, how well educated were the millionaires?
Well, I found that, the 68% of the millionaires did go to college. So that means 32% didn't. Education's important. But it doesn't necessarily have to be a formal education. Many of the millionaires, many of the self-made millionaires, they became smart or educated on their own. They were self-educated. And the self-made millionaires, which were 177 in my study, well, 36% of them never obtained a college degree. So they're learning while they're pursuing something that they love, that they're passionate about. They're learning everything they can about it. And you could just look at any of the billionaires, pick them out of the hat, and you'll find that a large percentage of them didn't really have a great education. They didn't have a college degree. They just pursued something they were passionate about. And I think that's the key. When you're passionate about something, you're going to self-educate yourself.
Good point.
It's one of the habits.
Wasn't it Bill Gates or Steve Jobs or any of these other guys that didn't finish college?
Yeah, that's right. Those two guys did not finish college. And many of the other billionaires, they didn't go to these Ivy League schools. If they did go to college, they went to sort of, you know, middle-of-the-road colleges. Sure, some of them did go to the great colleges and they had an advantage. But, you know, the bell curve, if you look at the bell curve, where the majority of the millionaires and the billionaires are, they really weren't the top cream of the crop, educated individuals.
Yeah, very interesting. Okay, Tom, and how about this? Any indication of just overall intellectual ability? I mean, did the people in the study group all have, you know, all Mensa Society members, or what are we talking about?
Boy, I love that question, David, because one of the things that people think is, oh, I'm, you know, my genes dictate, you know, how successful I'm going to be because I don't, you know, I'm not that smart. I've got 110 IQ and you know, these millionaires, they must have 130 or 140 IQ. Well, here, I've written several articles about this because I've been studying neurology, neurogenesis and all this stuff about the brain. What's interesting is that your IQ, we now know, changes with time. So the IQ that you're born with or that you have in grammar school or high school is can be completely different than the IQ that you have in your mid-40s or your mid-50s or 60s.
Thank God.
Your IQ,
there's still hope.
IQ can grow.
There's still hope, Tom. Thank you. And I've only got time for one more myth, and that is that we've kind of saved the best for last here, that rich people, they're not charitable. They hate poor people, and they're just mean and nasty and don't want anybody else to have any of their money.
Yeah, I believed that for a long time, but I found out that that was just spot on wrong. 62% of the wealthy in my study, they contributed between 5 and 10% of their net income. But what was more interesting to me, David, was they didn't stop there. They actually went above and beyond. They contributed their time as well. 72% of the wealthy volunteered 5 hours or more a month for some charity, and oftentimes they were running the charity. They were running committees on the charity. They were on the board of directors of the charity. They were instrumental in the success of the charity. So they took leadership positions in these charities. So not only giving their time, not only giving their money, but also giving an enormous amount of their time.
Excellent. Tom Corley, ladies and gentlemen, richhabits.net, lots more there to, for you to take a look at, and we are very glad to have Tom with us. Check out the books, How to Raise Your Children to Be Happy and Successful in Life, and the Daily Success Habits of Wealthy Individuals. Tom, we'll have you back when we have more time, and I appreciate you coming on.
Thanks for having me on again, David. I really appreciate it.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.